You're listening to The Aaron Carrera Show. And now your host, Aaron Carrera.
Hello, everybody. Hello, and welcome to The Aaron Carrera Show. It is me, Aaron. It is Thursday, June 13th, 10:02 a.m. if you're listening live. And I am coming at you live from Los Angeles, California. I am back home after my travels to the Midwest. It was a wonderful trip. I had such a fabulous time. In fact, I just saw this morning on Instagram that Minneapolis was just named the happiest city in the country. And as a former Minneapolitan, I am going to tell you that it's sort of like saying that Finland is the happiest country. I think it's not that necessarily Minneapolitans are so much happier, but that their expectations are greatly managed because they live with winter. So I got to tell you, though, it was really wonderful. I went to visit my parents and my brother and his kids, and I got to watch my niece, who's graduating from high school, or graduated now from high school. I got to watch her senior choir concert. I got to watch her graduation. I got to spend time with my nephew also a little bit, see a few friends. I walked around. You know, if you've ever been to Minneapolis or you're from there, you know, it's a city of lakes. In fact, that's what Minneapolis means, city of water. And I got to walk around Lake Nokomis. I talked with member Mark Malman, who wrote the Happiness Playlist book. He and I got to go for a walk around Nokomis. I got to go for a walk around Lake of the Isles and Lake Bede Makaska with my friend Josh. And I got to walk around the nature preserve that where my parents live. They live with the nature preserve. Their backyard sort of goes to these trails to a nature preserve with my parents and my aunt, who's their neighbor. Really got to see so many friends and family. I didn't sleep much because it was a working trip. So I would get up. I didn't set an alarm. I just would get up at the crack of dawn, and then I would sign on for One to Listen. I would do some work. I would do some Zooms. I'd go for my walk. I'd come home. I'd hang out with one of my family members. I'd go do something with a friend. But it was wonderful. And I was wired at night, so I couldn't sleep. I also so many wonderful Minneapolis things I got to do. I got to go to Stillwater, which is a town on the St. Croix River. And I got to go see the Minnesota Orchestra, where if you're a fan of classical music, Yefim Bronfman was playing Beethoven's Fourth Piano Concerto. It was incredible. I got to try some great little restaurants. Punch Pizza makes great Neapolitan pizza. I went to the 801 Steakhouse with a friend. I went to Maria's on Franklin in Minneapolis, where they have really great Colombian breakfasts. Just really fun. Everything about the trip was great, except for the lack of sleep. But what are you going to do? You're going to come home and sleep 9 hours a night, two nights in a row, to try to make up for it. Anyhow, a real blessing to be able to spend that time with my family. So thanks, you all, especially if you're some of my regular folks over on One to Listen, for letting me have some slightly amended hours. It was so fun in terms of all of the creatures and critters, because the nature preserve by my parents' house, I saw Baltimore Orioles, I saw Cardinals, I saw Blue Jays, Robins, Hawks, I saw, of course, you know, sparrows and wrens. There were squirrels, and there's a family of albino squirrels near my parents' house, and little chipmunks, ducks and ducklings. Well, the ducklings were basically teenagers at this point. And there's, of course, just so many wonderful, what am I missing? Bunny rabbits and deer. There's deer sometimes. There was deer in the backyard. So many fun, you know, for those of you who live in nature, like I was telling someone who lives in suburban Denver, she's like, yep, that's my life all the time. And I'm like, yeah, well, I've got wildlife here in urban LA. It's just, it's not the cute little creatures you want to see. It's like, you do see squirrels, but you see, and pigeons and crows, and periodically I've seen, you know, certain bugs that none of us like, and certain other bugs none of us like, and certain other rodents none of us like. I live next to a series of really cool restaurants and clubs, and while those restaurants and clubs are great, you know, in the trash area you might see a raccoon or something even else. So it's just funny. Rarely do I see super cute critters. Well, of course, all of my neighbors with their cute dogs and cats, but Why is it that I do not find raccoons cute? Because I know some people do. It's because I do not like a wild animal that is not afraid of me. You know, nature is awesome, but if you go out in nature, it can also be a little wild, dangerous, and brutal. So just take care. Anyhow, thank you all. And speaking of One to Listen and my regulars, this show is brought to you by me, Erin at One to Listen. That's onetolisten.com/Erin. Yesterday's One to Day. We had a bunch of fun specials up and discounted rates all day, shifting rates. I still have a few of my, I still have a time-based session and an EBS on special rate. And if you go to any of my social media and click on the link in bio, it'll bring you to my link tree. And if you scroll halfway down, you'll see a link to a top secret 50-minute session with me on One to Listen for only $1.99. It's a great deal. And if you go to onetolisten.com/Erin, I have some cool new time-based sessions, and there's all of the regular email-based, or sorry, cool new email-based sessions and all of the regular time-based sessions that we usually have. So how are you all doing? If you want to come find me and chat with me during the show, you can. Come on over to onetoradio.com, click on chat with us on Facebook, and at the top of the page, you'll see the banner that says, "You're listening to the Erin Carrera Show." And it's a picture of me at the beach. That's where we will be chatting back and forth. And I see Renee. Hello, good morning, Renee. If you want to let me know how you're doing, I'd love to hear how you're all doing. And I ask that because the energy right now is it, well, here where I am, there's June gloom, right? Where in the mornings, it's super, the marine layer comes in and it's very gray and kind of cool and maybe even cold, depending on how a person handles weather. It's a little bit morose and well, it's gloomy and I'm moody. When I was young, I loved June gloom because I loved being done with school and getting up early in the morning. I was always an early riser. And I would just get my books because I was always reading a million books. And I would read and read and read and then go for a walk in the woods because I grew up next to a huge forest. And I would just dream about the books and daydream and daydream and daydream. And then I'd go home at some point and I'd practice because I still practice piano every day. And then I would read and read and read. And maybe if it was when my grandmother lived with us, I'd probably watch a soap opera with her. I didn't really, I think I, we liked, not The Young and the Restless. She watched The Young and the Restless and The Bold and the Beautiful. Oh no, whatever was after The Young and the Restless. And there was this very, very beautiful red-haired lady. Anyway, that's all I remember. We are reaching way, 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 way back into some scary places in my memory. Anyhow, I just love those days, but you know, who gets to do that as an adult, right? Who gets to, unless you're, I mean, I do read a lot as an adult, but it's also partially work. And I feel like most of us, of course, it's wonderful to be a kid. It's wonderful to get that time that you probably won't get back until maybe when you're retired. You know, I guess I did just describe my dad's life. My dad's a retired school teacher, and what he does, he gets up and he has breakfast and he looks at his phone, reads the news, and then he goes for a little walk. And then he either reads his book or watches the Western of the day. And then he goes for another little walk and then he has lunch. And then he either reads a book or he does some Sudoku or he might watch a little more Western television because he loves Westerns. It's all Westerns all the time. There's a whole channel. It's a whole channel, all Westerns. He might sometimes do a little sci-fi. And then maybe he'll do some more math problems. I mean, this is his life. Like, how wonderful. And then maybe he might go run some errands with my mom or go, you know, do things that need to be done. And then he'll, you know, watch the news. Maybe he'll play a little bit with the soccer ball. It's like great. It's great, right? But, you know, he's an elderly retired man. I'm a middle-aged working woman. But the energy right now, you know, Jay, my wonderful producer Jay, and I were talking about how even for kids, even though some of that ability is still present, the energy is not like how it was when we were young, even for kids. And especially, of course, in an urban area, a city like Los Angeles, The energy is very chaotic. Everything is asking us to digitize everything, to become plugged in and computerized on everything. And it creates a certain amount of overriding of our nervous systems, right? It kind of fries the wiring of our nervous systems. And I'm going to tell you all, I think I've spoken about it before, but maybe not for a while, about a journey I took to Prophecy Rock, which is a petroglyph in the Hopi village of Ora Ebi related to the Hopi prophecy. And it's not what I had planned to talk about today, but I want to talk about it because I want for us to consider our choices and what we really, truly might want for ourselves. I'm not saying that we shouldn't get we're basically already computerized. We're basically already cyborgs. I travel with my phone in my hand pretty much constantly because I want to track my steps, right? I'm trying to get to 10,000 steps every day. I don't really need the phone to tell me that. I know how much I need to walk in my neighborhood. I know the path and the route I need to take to get to that 10,000 steps. I really don't need the phone with me. Of course, I also take the phone with me so I can listen to my podcast or call a friend or whatever. So, the moment in time we're in is where we're making a lot of decisions about what we want to allow in terms of letting our bodies and our brains be, I'll use the word, not captured, not taken over, but blended with technology. And there can be wonderful things about technology. I'm grateful for the phone because it means that I can, go for a walk and call my mom across the country. And I can be stuck in traffic and listen to an amazing podcast. Although I always had the radio before, didn't I? And we've had phones, and before that we had letters. We did have letters. I still write letters, in fact. But I'm thinking of things like my sister, who's a type 1 diabetic. She has a pump, right? She has a little meter that's attached to her stomach, and it monitors her blood sugar. And there's an automatic pumping of some of the insulin, and then if it gets out of whack, she administers some herself, and that saves lives, right? Technology can save lives, and that's great. But I wonder if we want to get to the point where we can use our minds to buy things on Amazon. Like, is that really what we want the purpose of our life to be? And I'm raising my hand as like a guilty party here. I spend a lot of time shopping on Amazon. I'm trying to do less, actually. I'm trying to shop at local as much as possible. I am trying to not order things as much as possible. I'm instead trying to go buy them myself in person. And that's my personal choice. I know for some people there's less choice, or they don't feel they have a choice. But the reason why is because A, I am a small business and I believe in small businesses, and B, because I don't want to be marketed to all the time. I'm tired of it. Sometimes I just want to just be. Sometimes I don't want someone to suggest a dress to me. I want to go look at what dresses are being suggested to me in the stores, as if I have that much choice anyway, right? Okay, so years and years ago, 14 years ago now, I was on a tour, a music tour from Los Angeles to Tucson, Arizona, to Santa Fe, New Mexico, to Austin, where I was playing at South by Southwest. And then I was going to be in South by Southwest for the whole week, staying with my friend Josh, who just visited me in Minneapolis. Also, my friend Aaron was coming to visit, and my sister was coming to visit and watch my show. And I also ran into my sister-in-law's brother, which is fun, and a couple other people I knew from Minneapolis. Anyhow, so the whole tour was very magical. I was by myself in the beginning part of the tour. I just loaded up my little Jetta with my sound system, my keyboard, my guitar, and I even brought my massage table because at that time I figured you never know, you might find someone who wants a massage and you might make an extra $100 or whatever. I was broke, is what I'm saying, and I needed money. And I had my posters and CDs for sale. I loaded it all up in a Jetta and my suitcase. And I just started on the tour that I'd booked myself. My label was not being supportive at the time. And I was paying for everything myself. But I was just so committed to my career and the promises I had made to myself and these venues that I was going to do it. So I did. I've just always been that way. maybe sometimes too committed. But anyway, this trip was amazing. I started driving east and I started heading toward Tucson. And it's as if once I crossed the desert into Arizona, the energies just started calming, almost getting eerie. Like the colors all around me started turning golden, and I started seeing things differently. And I was also, at the time, I should add that I was listening to books on CD. I was listening to a book by a physicist. Oh gosh, what's his name? Anyway, a book. I was listening to qu books on quantum physics and spirituality. A very famous writer, just can't think of his name, Gary something. Gary. Someone will tell me. Somebody in the chat room, tell me if you remember Gary. Anyhow, and I decided that I was going to start looking for things I'd never thought to think of before, start looking for things that were surprising. Gary Zukav. I was listening on CD to Gary Zukav books for like hours and hours and hours on end. Anyway, so my brain was expanding. I was growing as I was on this trip. I got to Tucson and I stayed, oh my gosh, and I stayed at, I'm saying, oh my gosh, you'll hear why. A friend of a friend named Joni, my friend named Chris had a friend who lived in Tucson named Joni, and Joni said, you could stay in my guest house. And so I did. And guess who I saw in Minneapolis? Chris and Joni, because Joni moved back to Minneapolis. It's funny, I just saw them on this trip too. It's all coming full circle, kids. Anyhow, so I was staying at Joni's guest house, and it was full of these Native American masks. She's Native American. And I went and I played my gig at the art gallery, and then I went with a bunch of the local music scene people, and we went to all these different hangs and venues to go hear other music. And I got home at 3 in the morning, and the woman who owns the art gallery had said, I'm going to leave the key under the mat. You can just take down your stuff in the morning when you go. Well, at like 3 in the morning, I tried to sleep. I slept for about an hour and I woke up dreaming that the masks were speaking to me. And the masks were saying, Aaron, you need to book a hotel now for Santa Fe. Because I wasn't booking hotels. I was just like, I'll see when I get there where I'm going to stay. And I was like, what? And the masks were telling me that I needed to book a hotel for Santa Fe now and that I needed to get on the road now. And it was 4 in the morning now. And I was like, I'm okay. So I got on Priceline.com, where back in the day you could say, okay, I want to try and get a 5-star hotel for, and you put in rate. So I said, there were no 5 stars, but there was a 4-star. So I decided I was going to go for a 4-star hotel for $75. And I got one at this beautiful spa and hotel in Santa Fe. And it was either the oldest or the only Native American run spa and hotel in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And then I locked up Joni's guest house and I went over to the gallery and I loaded up my gear. And by this point, it was like 6 in the morning and there was a coffee shop open. I grabbed breakfast and I got on the road. I got on Highway 77 heading towards Santa Fe. And I passed by a town named Oracle, which was one of the songs on that album that I was touring to promote on the CD that I was selling. And I thought, that's funny. And then as I started, I kept driving and driving. And then I realized it would have been my grandmother's birthday that very day. So I think she would have turned 90 because this, no, she would have turned, let's see, this last year in 2022, she would have been 100. So she would have been turning, oh, 88. So not super exciting, but still. Oh, I was on highway, that's what it was. I was on Highway 77, which is the year my mom graduated from college and her favorite number. And my grandmother would have been turning 88. My grandmother was a Pisces who taught me how to find four-leaf clovers. And just everything felt so serendipitous. So I called my mom and we had a nice conversation. And then as I was leaving Albuquerque, it started to snow. And it was just in the afternoon at this point, but it started to snow so heavily that we started getting to the point as we were climbing up the mountain, you couldn't see more than one car in front of you. And we were all driving so slow, you couldn't see the signs, the road signs, because they were covered in snow. Now, I did not have chains on my car. That was not on my tires, which was not a good thing. But I grew up driving in the snow. I know how to do it. But I also, And I didn't have, my phone was not working, and I had printed out directions, but I couldn't see the road signs. And so at a certain point, all of the cars were turning off because the road was closed. And I figured, okay, I have no idea where the heck I'm at, but I'm going to have to just get off the road because I don't have tires, chains for my tires. And it's going to get more and more dangerous with the snow. Like it was blizzard level now. And everyone is getting off. And I realized as I was taking the exit because the road was closed. So then I drove on off the exit into town, went to the first gas station I saw. I said, "Where am I? I'm heading toward this Native American Inn and Spa in the Santa Fe Inn and Spa, and I'm looking. I need to get there." And he said, "Oh, well, you're in Santa Fe, and that's literally 1 mile down this road." So I just happened to get off that exit, and I drove to that Inn and Spa, where the entire parking lot was packed. It was crammed full of cars. And I got in, there was a long line to see the concierge. And I waited. And when I was overhearing a family in front of me, they were like, "Well, we can't, all the roads are closed. We were trying to get home from Taos where we'd been skiing. All the roads are closed. There's nowhere to stay." And the concierge was like, "I'm sorry, sir. I can call around to other hotels to see if they have a room. You are welcome to stay in our lobby if you need to." Right? It was just, there was nowhere, nobody could get out of town. Everybody was stuck. There was no room at the inn. And so the guy said, "Okay, let me call around, see what I can find." And then he like turned to his family. He's like, "We might have to just stay here and camp out in the lobby for a little while." I get up to the concierge and I show him my ID. He says, "Yes, Miss Muir. Yes, we've upgraded you to the King Suite." And I was like, "Really?" And he said, "Yes, yes, we have." And I thought, "What on earth is happening?" Everything was just so, I don't know if I'm giving you the feel for how deeply magical it all was. There were constant serendipity, constant this golden hue everywhere, this golden light everywhere. So I get up to my room. I call my mother to tell her I'm fine. I opened my computer to Skype with my friend Debbie, and I ordered a meal, and then I took a long bath. I left my computer open, took a long bath, and I was so tired I just fell right asleep. And then that morning I woke up. And I couldn't remember for the longest time who I was. Like I was looking out the window and there was snow on the branches. And then I was looking down at the bedspread. It was all white. And I remembered that I had taken a bath, but I couldn't remember who I was. I just was confused. So I went back to sleep. I didn't worry about it. I wasn't worried. It wasn't scary. I just went back to sleep. And then I woke up again maybe an hour later, and the sun was up again. I mean, the sun was up a little higher. And I looked at the snow on the tree, on the branches of the tree outside the window of my room, and I said, "Oh, I was born in Minnesota in the winter." That was the first thing I remembered. And I looked to the bathroom door where it was open, and I was like, "I took a bath last night." And I looked down at the bedspread. And suddenly everything came rushing back to me, almost as if I went all the way backwards through time. My brain just like I was looking at the white bedspread, but I had at the same time a vision of going backwards, 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 backwards through time to total darkness. And then an explosion of light, and then forward, 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 forward through time, stars and stars and stars, and then meteors, like a star exploding and meteors floating to Earth. And coming to this blue planet, and the meteors crashing into Earth, and then forward, 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 forward through time, oceans into forests, into oceans into forests. And then all of a sudden, I remembered being born. And then I watched almost as if my life flashed forward before my eyes as I grew up, and I could see that I, not Aaron, but I, the observer, I could see. I had been born into this body, and in this lifetime, was born in the body of a girl who had become a woman named Erin. Her parents named her Erin, and her parents were very good, nice people who lived in Minnesota, and they raised her in Minnesota, and then she became a singer and a songwriter. And I watched the patterning. I watched the patterning that the neurological pat like I could see the neurological patterning in my body as I was trained. And I could see that things that felt like truths, meaning they felt like things that were just true about the way I was, the true about how I was, were patterns. So yes, my body, my bone structure, the color of my eyes, these were things that had been determined because of certain clicks left or right, certain number sequences, and certain neurological patternings. It's not like I could suddenly choose for my eyes to no longer be blue and make them green, although I guess I could with contacts, but right, it wasn't like that. It was just that some choices had been made that would not be unmade in this lifetime. But there were many choices that had been made that could be undone. Certain beliefs, certain thoughts, certain habits, certain practices. And I was so liberated. And then all of a sudden, my Skype called me. And it was my friend Debbie, who I'd called the night before. And I went and answered, and I remembered that Debbie was a friend of Aaron. And she looked at me and she said, "Whoa." And I said, "Hi." She said, "What happened to you? You're glowing." And I said, "I'm having a spiritual awakening." And she said, "I can see that. I can see that." She was very excited. And we both just sat there looking at each other for a while on Skype, of all things. And then I got an email from a mailing list I never signed up for. And the email was from somebody who was emailing me about the Hopi prophecy. Now, I don't know if I have that email anymore. I know that sounds insane, but it was an email of a Hopi prophecy. It's called the 11th Hour, Prophecy of a Hopi Elder. And this is what it read. You have been telling. Oh no, this is not it. Sorry. That is not it. It was a Hopi prophecy. I've got to find it. But it was a Hopi prophecy. Let me see if I can find it for you because it's really important to our conversation today. Hopi prophecy, spider web. So let me see if they have the. If I can find it. Anyway, so I was still sort of talking to my friend Debbie, and I said, "I need to let you go so that I can read this." And I can't find it right now, and I don't want to waste our time right now. But there was a se it was a poem, a series of things that they prophesied that would be coming true. And the different signs. And here it is. It was Prophecies of White Feather, a Hopi of the Ancient Bear Clan. Okay, so I got this mail email from who knows where on this mailing list. And by the way, this was 2010. This was 2010. And it said, "Prophecies of White Feather, a Hopi of the Ancient Bear Clan. He will bring with him the symbols and the missing piece of that sacred tablet now kept by the elders, given to him when he left. That shall identify him as our true white brother. The fourth world shall end soon, and the fifth world will begin. This the elders everywhere know. The signs over many years have been fulfilled, and so few are left. This is the first sign. We are told of the coming of the white-skinned men, like Pahana, but not living like Pahana men who took the land that was not theirs, and men who struck their enemies with thunder." I'm just going to pause from reading the prophecy now. To share, we know what that is. Struck their enemies with thunder, that would be guns, right? Muskets, guns, gunpowder. Back to the prophecy. This is the second sign. Our lands will see the coming of spinning wheels filled with voices. In his youth, my father saw this prophecy come true with his eyes, the white men bringing their families in wagons across the prairies. This is the third sign. A strange beast like a buffalo, but with great long horns, will overrun the land in large numbers. These, White Feather saw with his eyes the coming of the white men's cattle. This is the fourth sign. The land will be crossed by snakes of iron. So I'm going to pause here and I'm going to say, the snakes of iron, to me, those are the railroad tracks. My great grandfather, well, both of them, because there was the one who, was the father of my grandmother and then the stepfather after my great. They both worked for the railroads and they both died working on the railroads. But that's what I believe is the snakes of iron. Okay, back to the prophecy. This is the fifth sign. The land shall be crisscrossed by a giant spider's web. Okay, I'm going to pause to say, to me, that's the phone lines and the power lines, right? Back to the prophecy. This is the sixth sign. This land shall be crisscrossed with rivers of stone that make pictures in the sun. Well, don't you think that that's the highway system and the freeway system? This is the seventh sign. You will hear of the sea turning black and many living things dying because of it. Well, we know that that's the oil spills. This is the eighth sign. You will see many youth who wear their hair long like my people come and join the tribal nations to learn their ways and wisdom. And this is the ninth and last sign. You will hear of a dwelling place in the heavens above the earth that shall fall with a great crash. It will appear as a blue star. Very soon after this, the ceremonies of my people will cease. These are the signs that great destruction is coming. The world shall rock to and fro. The white man will battle against other people in other lands, those who possess the first light of wisdom. There will be many columns of smoke and fire, such as White Feather has seen the white men make in the deserts not far from here. Only those which come will cause disease and a great dying. Many of my people, understanding the prophecies, shall be safe. Those who stay and live in the places of my people also shall be safe. Then there will be much to rebuild, and soon, very soon afterwards, Pahana will return. He shall bring with him the dawn of the fifth world. He shall plant the seeds of his wisdom in their hearts. Even now the seeds are being planted. These shall smooth the way to the emergence into the fifth world. White Feather shall not see it. I am old and dying. You perhaps will see it in time and time. Okay, so that is the prophecy of White Feather, who was a Hopi, Native American, and he came from the ancient Bear Clan. So now I grew up next to a Lakota reservation, and we spent a lot of time in the summer. We would go to a lot of the powwows and a lot of the events, and I can't say that I am a part of that community, but that I spent a lot of my childhood engaging with a lot of Native American people, just part of my neighborhood where we grew up, right? Part of my childhood and a lot of the time I spent with people. And of course, a lot of my Native American friends. I am 1/16th Indigenous, but I don't think that really counts. It's really not very much, right? It's like, that was like, my sister did 23andMe and it was like a very small percentage. So I don't feel like, you know, but I guess there is a deep connection there somewhere if we go back multiple generations. But I mean, I have a lot more Norwegian and Swedish DNA in me, I guess is what I'm saying, and Scottish and Welsh. But I've always felt very deeply connected to our Lakota neighbors, right? So I got this email. This is March 2010. And I read it and I decided I needed to go for a walk around Santa Fe. And now the snow was melting. The sun was coming out. The blizzard from the night before, the snow was melting already. That's how hot it was. And I walked around Santa Fe and I just enjoyed being. I didn't need to remember who I was. And then I had realized I hadn't eaten. And I went to like a Whole Foods and I bought some cookies. I went back to my hotel to eat some cookies. And on the television was my friend's dad, a friend of mine. His dad is a pretty famous former professional wrestler turned politician. Anyway, and as I was watching his dad talk about healthcare on CNN, that very friend of mine called. It was like the serendipity just continued. And I was like, oh my God, I was just watching your dad on CNN. And he was like, oh, well, how are you? Anyway, good friend of mine who I loved. And this is a friend of mine who is very spiritual. So I told him what I was going through. And he was very kind of helped me through a lot of it. And we talked through a lot of it. And then I knew I had to get up because I had gigs and I had to get on tour. And I went and I continued my tour and I ended up driving to Austin and had a very deep experience with my two friends and my sister. And it was on that trip that my sister decided, she had been living in South Dakota at the time. And I don't want to tell her story, it's not mine to tell. but also connected to Native American culture, by the way, because she was in the process of breaking up with someone who was Native American, not because he was Native American, she just happened to be Native American. But anyway, and she said that after that trip was the trip where she decided to move to Los Angeles, and she was going to come stay with me. And she moved, a few months later, my dad and she got into a car and they drove to LA and she moved in with me. And we lived together for a year and a half until she met her now husband and they fell in love and they got married and all lived happily ever after and stuff, whatever that means. But there was a point where I had told my sister about some of my adventures on the way to South by Southwest because we were having these deep parallel experiences. And my sister and my friend Debbie and I decided that we were going to, the day after Thanksgiving, we were going to take a road trip to Arizona to go to Oraibi, a Hopi village, to go see Prophecy Rock. Because, oh, I forgot to mention that in that email they showed a picture of Prophecy Rock, which is a petroglyph that shows two pictures. One is a picture of the humans who are becoming more and more and more technically advanced. And one is a picture of the humans who stay humble and stay with the ways of nature. And the humans who become more and more and more and more technically advanced at one point fall off the earth. And the humans who stay humble and close to the earth just continue on and on. Now that's the interpretation that I was told. And we decided we were going to go see it. So we drove all the way out to Sedona. We stayed overnight first in Sedona with somebody who thought we were aliens. I'm not kidding. If there's time, I'll get to that story, but it's more funny and less and a little scary and less about the beautiful experience we had at Prophecy Rock. And we got up really early. I'm going to find a picture of Prophecy Rock and put it up in the Facebook group. We got up very early. And we, I'm gonna find the picture and take a screenshot for y'all. We got up very, very early and we drove to Oraibi and we got a little lost along the way. So we drove to a Native American arts and crafts store. And I walked in and I felt like I was going home. I felt like I was going to my hometown to find an old boyfriend. That's what it felt like. And I walked into the store, and the woman was there who was standing there at the cash register smiled and said, "Well, hi, how have you been?" It was as if she knew me. I'm just going to cry. Sorry, thinking about how much she recognized me and I recognized her and how she welcomed me with such love. And I said, I've been okay. It hasn't been easy. And she said, "I understand." I said, "How have you been?" And she said, "We've been okay. We've been getting by." And I said, "I'm here with my sisters and we're looking for Prophecy Rock." And she said, "Oh, well, let me draw a map." And she drew a map. And while she was drawing the map, I looked around and I bought a few different items from the store, some beautiful earrings, a pair for each of us, me, Laura, and Debbie. And But a bunch of things, beautiful things. And I said, "Okay, how much for all this?" And she said, "Oh, no." And I said, "Oh, I have to pay you." And she said, "Well, okay, then let me give you the discount." And I said, "Okay." I just didn't want her to give me the discount because, this was not an area with a lot of development. And I don't want to make any presumptions about, what kind of money they had, but there were a lot of tar paper shacks in this area, right? A lot of trailers. So I don't know that they were a moneyed, that there was a lot of money here. Anyway, so she explained to me how to get to Prophecy Rock, and she gave me that, wrapped up all the earrings and the stuff. And then she said, "Well, don't be too long in coming back. You should come back and visit us." I said, "Okay, thank you so much. I will try." And she said, "I hope you do." And so then I left and I felt so special and I felt really like I did shouldn't leave, but we had things we had to do, but I also had to go. So we followed her map and we went to Prophecy Rock. And as soon as we parked, I felt the plateau that was right behind it. There's all these like beautiful plateaus. It's just incredible, incredible beauty out there. I felt the plateau behind the Prophecy Rock itself, where somebody has made this petroglyph. It said, "Come here, climb on top of me." And so my Debbie and Laura and I went and we climbed on top, and we each decided we needed to have our own sort of space apart from one another. And now the sun was high and it was pretty warm, not hot, but pretty warm. And the plateau said, "I want you to lie down on me." And so I did. I just pressed every part of my body that I could against the plateau. And it felt like I was visiting my true love, like I was visiting my partner, like I was visiting the longest love of my life. And Prophecy, the rock said, it wasn't the Prophecy Rock, it was the rock behind it, said, "Give me all your pain." So I just imagined myself releasing all of that. I had a lot of physical pain. And I imagined myself releasing it all into the plateau. And then I had another one of those visions where I could watch myself go back, 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 back. So fast. I can't explain how fast it went to go back to nothingness. Because in the time it took me to explain that I went back to nothingness, I was already in the nothingness. And then again, I felt in the nothingness suddenly a seed of light, and then light growing, and then the light expanding, and then an explosion of light, and then the meteors floating through space, and some parts of the meteor landing on Earth and others not. And I saw that some of the different pieces of the meteor of this other star, not from solar system, I was from another star. Some of that star incorporated with the earth and became different trees, animals, and people, but not all of the earth. Not every tree has this star energy in it. Not every animal has this star energy. Not every human has this star energy. But then I was shown in the vision that there were people who shared this star energy with me in our DNA, and plants and animals and non and other kinds of life forms that we don't recognize as life forms, but were. And that sometimes when I would meet people, like for example, the boyfriend I had at that time, we were on again, off again, we were off in that moment. He too had carried in him some of that same star energy. And so the vision showed me that it wasn't that he was necessarily my husband. He wasn't my husband. The vision showed me that. It showed me that he and I came from the same star, and we recognized each other, and we felt home in each other. And we needed each other to recognize that there was home on Earth, there was a home on Earth, even if Earth wasn't the home. So that we understood we were here on purpose and we had to live and not die by our own hands, because we both struggled. And that after we had moved on from one another, I would meet my husband, and it prophesied all kinds of things. The vision I had showed me what would happen in my future with my husband. And guess I don't actually even think about it all that often, but it's actually some parts of it have happened already, which is interesting. And when I awoke, so to speak, or came out of the vision, my pain was gone. I also knew that this rock, this plateau, was from the star and carried that star energy in it. And I knew that we were deeply connected, but that I had to leave. And so the three of us got in the car and we started driving back to Sedona. And as I was leaving, I didn't want to leave. I felt like I was being torn away from my family, even though my family was also in the car with me. But we had to leave. It wasn't right for me to stay there. It wasn't my home. It wasn't where I was meant to be. And then on the drive back, we decided not to stay where we had been staying at a friend of a friend's in Sedona because he was, well, I'll share that story some other time, but he thought something was going to happen that wasn't going to happen romantically and sexually, and we weren't comfortable. So my sister Priceline'd and got us into a beautiful, guess what, spa and inn hotel. And we had a totally different evening. We went and had a beautiful dinner, and we met this amazing waiter. He's now since passed away, but the waiter was so cool. He was also a writer and an actor, and his wife was a psychic and a tarot reader and a spiritual woman. She and I are still friends on Facebook. I've never actually met her in person, but she's an amazing person. And we had a wonderful hot tub soak, and then the next morning, our friend, she decided to rent a car and keep going on her journey to go take photos of old ghost towns. And my sister and I got in the car and we started heading west back to California. And the snow was falling and it was just beautiful. It was like a beautiful snowfall. Kind of not in like Minnesota in any way, really, except for the snow. But it reminded my sister and I of driving through those first snowfalls in Minnesota where it's so beautiful and clean and white. And there's a peace and a quiet that comes with that snowfall. And we just drove in silence for a long time. And that whole trip changed my life. Both of those trips changed my life because they changed how I understood myself to be on this earth, who I was on this earth, what I was doing on this earth. It wasn't now this idea of like, oh, I have to become like a famous singer or famous actress or famous psychic to have meaning. That's that is my life's calling. That was such a 21st century vision. My life's purpose was to be. My life's purpose was to express and heal. There were a lot of non-star earthlings, plants, people, animals, who would never get me, and that would be okay. It didn't mean I couldn't love them or they wouldn't love me in return. It was just they wouldn't understand me. And I didn't need them to understand me because I had this whole star family. So I could actually give up trying to make people hear me, make them understand me, make them get me, need to people please, need to be famous. I'm not saying it was so easy to just let go of it all. The habits are still there, but I had been shown how to rewire my nervous system in that first vision in Santa Fe. I was here to be of service, including to myself, through my talents. I was here to use my talents for love, and the rest was joy. That was it. It was so simple. It was so beautiful. It was such a gift. And now I shared that whole long story because at Aura Ibi, at Prophecy Rock, that Hopi prophecy says that there will be people who will leave planet Earth. They're going to go to some sort of heaven, not on Earth, right? Now, do I think that's some kind of religious version of heaven? Personally, no. I think we're talking about going to Mars. I hope it works out for the people who go. I hope that the people who find other planets that it works. You know, I believe in human possibility, but I also feel that life doesn't stop. Yes, of course, someday the sun will become so big and so bright and so hot that the earth will be absorbed right into it. And then someday, science tells us that star will explode. And then someday that star will explode and become a dead star, and all these new energy will be formed, and it's constantly forming and reforming. That's what science says. And whatever we might believe religiously or spiritually, I think it's important for us not to be afraid. Not to fear technology, because besides, we only fear it in certain ways. Clearly, anyone who's listening to this loves technology enough to listen to online radio, right? So it's to be more conscious, I think. Do I really want to digitize and technologize myself more than I'm already technologized? Will I have a choice? Well, will I what will I be weighing in terms of feeling left out or not? I mean, you know, there are people in this world who don't have cell phones, or Oprah doesn't have a cell phone, but I guarantee you all of her assistants do. Right? Just like when I am with my family, we don't have our phones at the table, or we might have it, but we don't look at it. We hang out, we talk, we play games. Is that better? Is that superior? I don't know about that. But I want to be consciously choosing connection. And I am consciously choosing to be as organic as much as possible, to drive less whenever I can, to not order things on Amazon that I could walk 5 minutes to the corner store to buy for myself. Am I going to save the world environmentally? No. Am I living according to my principles the best I can? Yeah. Can we continue to choose and maybe perhaps even demand for ourselves that we stay grounded, that we connect to the earth and allow the stars to affect us and to show us its wisdom? Can we let Prophecy Rock show us its wisdom? And it doesn't have to be Prophecy Rock. You all know I'm a weirdo, and I don't think I'm a weirdo. I know that trees have energy and life force and consciousness. Science says trees have consciousness. That may not be the same thing as a human mind, but it's consciousness nonetheless. And I love to go out and talk to my tree friends, put my hand on the tree, put my heart up against the tree. I love to look at a plant and ask it a deep question and let it answer back. It's not answering in English per se. No, of course, it speaks Hindi. No, I'm just kidding. It speaks Italiano. Parliamo in Italiano, eh? No, it speaks in images and energy and feelings and vibes for me. But I think there's so much value in letting ourselves choose. Do I want to be distracted by every ad on Instagram? And let me tell you, it's hard. I'll go on Instagram because I'm going to look and see if somebody's emailed me and I get distracted by three really funny Instagram reels. I have to be very conscious. Oh no, what was I doing here? Right. I was just seeing if so and so had messaged me back because God forbid that I don't have eight different ways people can get a hold of me, right? Which is why I fail on all of them. But I wish for us, especially when the time is like it is now, chaotic. It's easy for it to be chaotic. And it's easy to get pulled apart and therefore be a little depressed even because of it. Because we're like, wait, what was I doing? Why don't I feel like I am following my purpose? How do I make sure I'm spending enough time on my purpose when I have to clear out 800 emails out of my Gmail every day? Right? What is it that you want? How can you give yourself that? Do you need to slow down? Or at least ground yourself to give yourself more of your life. Not Aaron's life, not mom's life, not dad's life, not so-and-so politician's life, not Oprah's life or Gary Zukav's life, but your life. How can you give yourself more of your life? Because whatever happens in the next incarnation, you're not there now, you're here. And you deserve to be you. Whether you came from the stars or the earth or Mars or Ginkgo, I don't know, whatever, right? Wherever you came from, whoever you are, let's see if we can give ourselves a little more choice. And that does take courage, and that does take discipline, and it does take even a little risk in a kind of way. But I think you might like it. And I bet you probably do it a lot and just needed a little reminder. All right, friends. So we've come to the end of another episode of the Erin Carrera Show. Can barely believe it. If you want to come find me on onetolisten.com, I'm in it for the summer, kids. So I don't have too much by way of travel until the end of August. So my hours will be pretty consistently all the time, or a lot of the time. And I would love to speak with you, chat with you, do a reading for you, do a meditation for you, guided EFT tapping. I'm considering teaching some meditation courses. Let me know if that's something you might be interested in, because if enough people are interested in it, I will. And until next week, I love you. Find me at onetolisten.com/Erin. Bye-bye.